Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 17, recorded September 21st, 2009.
And now it's time to find out everything you ever wanted to know about Caribensis, but were afraid to ask.
Yes, it's one of our podcasts again, as you well know. So, let's get started. I'm your host, Russ, and this is your other host,
Kelly.
So, here we go.
Okay, tell us the scientific name of Caribensis, because I'm sure you were afraid to ask that.
Yes. Well, if you'll pardon the pronunciation, it would be something like Pelvic Acromis Pulcher, or Pulcher, however you want to pronounce the CH. And it used to be Pelvic Acromis Caribensis, I believe, and that's where we get the name Caribensis from. It's an outdated name, but that's okay. We won't hold that against them.
It sticks.
Yes, and they're also called cribs for short. And they're a very interesting fish, so we're going to talk about them today. Yes.
All right. Why would people want to keep it?
Well, they're nice if you want a cichlid, so you get the full range of cichlid behavior, the pairing up, the parental care of the eggs and the fry, and so on. Interesting interactions among individuals and interactions with other fish in the tanks, the territoriality, the nesting sites, the whole business. You get all of that with Caribensis. But, in contrast with other easily bred cichlids, convict cichlids come to mind, they are good in a planted tank. Convict cichlids are not. Caribensis are. And, it sounds like Hiro, our African clawed frog, is singing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's picking up on the mic or not, but
he
decided to sing for a second. That was fun. Okay. Anyway, they are fun to keep because you can keep them in a planted tank. And they're more brightly colored than a lot of cichlids, so they're actually
they're very pretty.
They're very pretty fish. You get a lot of interesting colors. The females have a lot of sort of a pinkish red color to them, and the males have yellows and blues and all sorts of things going on, so it's interesting from that standpoint as well.
Okay, so what else do you want to tell us about what kind of setup they need?
Well, I would say minimum tank size 20 gallons. They'd be fine with something bigger and probably do better. If you want to keep them in a community tank, you really ought to have something bigger. Because if you have a 20-gallon tank, they'll consider the entire thing their territory and really not be very nice to a lot of fish. Fish that stay up higher in the water column might be okay, but maybe not. So, best, 20-gallon minimum, but higher is better.
Okay.
Then, like I said, planted tanks are good. They might dig a little bit in the substrate, but I haven't noticed much of that, except when they're spawning, they'll dig a little bit, but it hasn't been enough to cause any problems with the plants. So whatever conditions suit plants will suit them, and for breeding temperatures, anywhere from high 70s, maybe 78 Fahrenheit, to low 80s would be good. I keep mine, I think they're about 78 to 80 right now. And they're doing fine breeding at that temperature. And once again, filtration and lighting can suit the plants more than suit the cichlids, the cribs. They'll be fine.
Okay. How about... You mentioned that they would consider a 20-gallon tank their whole territory. How do they rate with aggression?
They are pretty aggressive when they're breeding. When they're not breeding, they're not all that aggressive, but if you're going to keep Caribensis, you're probably going to breed them. And so they will beat up on other fish, yes. They will kill smaller fish, and even they possibly kill bigger fish. Certainly hound them and harass them and damage them.
So is it better just to have them in the tank by themselves?
Well, it depends. If you have a big enough tank that they can chase other fish out and stake out a little area, like you have a 35-gallon or a 55-gallon or something, and you have cribs over in a corner reproducing, then the other fish are going to be fine swimming around the rest of the tank. and they won't really bug fish that they're not that aren't small enough to swallow that much. I mean, they'll bother them a little bit and keep them away from the territory, but they won't kill them so much. But they would do pretty poorly with other herbensis in the tank. You should just have a mature pair. Of course, getting that mature pair may mean you have to pick up half a dozen young fish and let them grow up. Or you might do like I did and just went to the store and pick them out carefully, look at the males, look at the females, and you know, pick one out of each. And then you do find mine paired up immediately and spawned really quickly.
Okay, for sources then, is the pet store usually the best buy, or can you find them online? Or?
You could find them online, but you probably wouldn't want to pay the shipping fees, since you can go to the pet store and get them for fairly cheaply. I got mine, and mine were, you know, spawning age, for about $6 or $7 each. You can get them for cheaper if you go for younger ones. It's not that hard to find them for a couple of dollars. I've seen them for $2 or $3. When they're younger, so.
And when you go to look for one, what things should you look for?
Okay, well, you should make sure you're getting, if you want to go the pair route, you need to be able to distinguish male from female. The females generally have sort of a pinkish or reddish belly, which, when they're not spawning or in spawning mode, they have kind of a little pinkish tinge to their belly that's kind of roundish. But when they're in spawning mode, it gets really rich, richly colored. And they also have some eye spots. One on the top of the tail fin and one on the top of the dorsal fin is common. There are some variations that you can see there. But
so will they have these already in the pet store, or will you have to wait for them to color up when you get them home?
Depends on how big they are. But if they're... I've seen them pretty small and still sexable by these visual cues. You know, maybe an inch and a half long, you can look at it and say, that's a male, that's a female.
Okay.
So you look for those eye spots, kind of a dark spot on the tail fin, and then on the back of the dorsal fin, the rear part of the dorsal fin. And that would be a female, and her dorsal and anal fins tend to be fairly rounded at the ends, terminal part of the fin. The male, on the other hand, lacks these eye spots, doesn't have the reddish or pinkish belly, and his dorsal and anal fins tend to be more pointed. And then his color scheme is a bit different too. His fins tend to have more color in them than the female does, but like I said, not the red pink kind of thing going on.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your experience in breeding your pair of crebensis lately.
Okay. Well, after I first got them, it took about a week. They were about, let's see, probably about 2 inches long, so they're not full grown, but they were old enough to spawn. It took them about a week before they started finding a nesting site, and I should talk about nesting sites. I neglected to mention
that. Let's talk about nesting sites.
Okay. They need some place to spawn, and they don't usually like to spawn directly on the substrate or on the glass like some cichlids will. They prefer a cave-like structure, so you can use a terracotta pot, you can use a coconut, half a coconut with a hole cut in it, something like that. Well, I put, I think, initially 2 terracotta pots, one with the hole knocked out of the back of it, so it was essentially a tunnel, and another one with part of the side knocked off so that you could set it on its side, and it was a stable sort of cave with a flat bottom right on top of the gravel. I initially put those 2 in, and they decided to spawn on the outside of the larger tube-like pot the first time. Just at the edge, right where it started touching the gravel. They dug a little bit of the gravel out of the way and spawned there. And a few days later, they had a small school of little babies swimming around. Once the eggs are hatched, they drop to the bottom. And they're wrigglers for a couple of days, just not free swimming, but they're a tail attached to this big yolk sac, and their body whips back and forth as they absorb that yolk sac. And once they do that, they start to swim. And then it was a few days after that, let's see, There were about a dozen baby fish. It wasn't a big batch, which is not uncommon for first timers. They tend to have smaller batches, or fewer of them survive to the stage of free swimminess. And they did that for a while, and then they suddenly disappeared. I wasn't unduly concerned, because it's very common with cichlids for their first batches of babies not to work. It might be one, it might be several, but it's not uncommon for it not to work for a few times. So I wasn't all that worried. And a week or two later, they spawned again. But I began to notice a pattern, and that was they would easily produce fertile eggs. Fertile eggs would hatch into wrigglers, and they'd start moving the wrigglers around, and then they would disappear. So I began to watch really carefully to figure out what was going on. And I noticed that they would get lost in the gravel. But that's what seemed to be happening with the babies. They get lost in the gravel, the parents couldn't pick them up, and so they would
They didn't die. Hold the fin, you know, you gotta hold the fin when you cross the street. They didn't hold the fin.
Yeah, more they or less, lost. That was what was going on. Shades of films involving Percula clownfish.
Yes.
That I won't mention on the air. And anyway, it was that was the problem. And so I realized I needed to adjust that. And so I put a couple of other pots in there that had not had the bottoms removed, so they were essentially caves with, they were rounded all the way around. I hadn't had the bottoms knocked out, so that with the solid bottom, I reasoned that the babies would stay inside. Well, that seemed to work, because lo and behold, the next time they spawned, they moved the wrigglers into one of these pots. But the pot, the way it was situated in the gravel, was kind of pouring the babies out. It was aiming a little bit slanted towards the gravel, and so even though the female would put the babies in, they would slowly, as they wriggled around, they'd work their way slowly out, and I'd see them one at a time kind of popping out of the pot and going into the gravel and getting lost. So I made another adjustment. Reached in, tipped the pot back, situated it into the gravel, and so it was tipped backwards, and so the babies would fall against the back part of the pot and remain in there. That worked like a charm. This last batch, they moved it into there, they wriggled in there for a few days, and then pretty soon they were out in free swimming and doing just fine. So that was kind of nice to see that they had finally figured out how to do it with a little help.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, this last batch is doing just fine. They've grown quite a bit. There are probably about 50 or 60 of them. I'm not sure exactly. And they all seem to be just fine. I did have to cover the intake of the filter with a little filter floss to make sure that they don't get sucked up, because I saw them swimming dangerously close to there and remembered that, oh, it would be a good idea to cover that up, as I had done when I'd been raising other cichlids. But it had been a while since I'd done that, so I'd forgotten for a little while, but no harm done. I took care of it, and they're now protected.
Okay, what do the crebensis like to eat?
Well, crebensis are not that picky. They'll eat most foods. I give mine flakes and pellets of various kinds, and most crebensis will accept those without a problem. Although the female, I've noticed, is a little pickier. There are certain pellets she'll spit out. She'll take them in her mouth, but then spit them out without finishing them. So I give her mostly flakes as far as that goes. But I also give them live foods, amphipods and grindleworms being two that they favor quite a bit. So I give them live food treats several times a week of those sorts, and that helps them keep them in breeding condition, and they appreciate it. The babies, once they are free swimming, you shouldn't feed them before they are free swimming, but once they are, they'll immediately take microworms and welterworms, which is what I've been giving them, and I give my microworms and welterworms a pretty good enriched diet, and the fry are growing like crazy every day. They're bigger, noticeably bigger on it, and I do feed them several times a day. If I can get it, I try to do at least three times a day so that their bellies are never completely empty. It's good to keep their bellies full when they're little. And once they'd probably at this point, and they're about a week old, take some finely powdered flake, but I'll probably keep them on microworms for another week or so, and then introduce finely powdered flake interspersed with the microworms, and when they get a little bit bigger after that, grindleworms would probably be fine as well to introduce. And then they'd be on the adult diet, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any troubleshooting or anything else we need to know to keep these lovely fish?
Well, I think that was about it. I worked the troubleshooting into the major
Yes, I guess you did.
Episode, so I guess we're fine. They're just fun if you don't have to have a planet tank to keep them, but it's a nice cichlid to try. If you have a planet tank, you don't want them to rip your plants up, and you want to try something a little bit different. They might be a little bit more difficult to spawn than convict cichlids, but they're not that much more difficult, and they have certain advantages that convict cichlids don't. But anyway, have fun with them. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.